What's up, Doc?
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Gene Schirachabrad here with Dr. Joe Palmer. How are you, Joe?
Doing well, Gene.
As like our last show, we are very happy to welcome Dr. Erson Religioso, Dr. E from the Manual Therapist blog. Dr. E did not get tired of us, and we enjoyed our podcast so much last time that we invited him to become a regular. And the good news is he did not say no yet. So he's with us this week. How are you, Dr. E?
I'm great. We've actually all been talking for an entire week, and we decided to start hitting record again.
Exactly. And
yes.
mostly talking
yes,
relevant PT things. So speaking of talking about relevant PT discussion, we've all seen various mistakes in the clinic, whether major or minor. And I think the saying is you learn more from your mistakes than you do from your the positives or your successes. So this week we wanted to cover some of the mistakes we've seen either with our students. Dr. E does courses all over the world that he teaches. Joe, a successful business partner, sees new clinicians come through his clinic that he has to train. So we'll kind of go around and talk some of the things we see, and hopefully you guys can relate to some of them and maybe even keep you from making some of them. So we'll see. How about we start with our dignified guest, Dr. E? You want to get this party started?
Sure. Well, basically, you know, I think I alluded to it in the last podcast, how much of a fan I am of modern pain science and what it shows, according to a very good body of research and numerous articles about how explaining pain to someone can reduce fear, can reduce anxiety, and thus raise pain and movement thresholds. Because what many people want to know what is wrong with them, sometimes actually just telling them that, you know, pain does not equate damage, especially if they weren't injured, and that your nervous system is only being vigilant and trying to protect you, that even them realizing more what pain is not rather than what it is very helpful. So I think a mistake I just made even last week, and this resulted in a very, very difficult patient scenario, was that I was seeing a third-year resident who was osteopathic trained, and he was in family med, and he came to me because he wanted a diagnosis, and I just did my usual kind of pain science spiel, like the diagnosis doesn't matter, and, you know, wouldn't you be happy if I gave you various ways to treat this after I got you moving better? And he was basically saying yeah, but somewhere along the line, he just flipped out at me and said, you know, you're not listening to me. All I really want are three differentials. Like, everyone should have three differentials. What are your three differentials for me? And I was just kind of taken aback, because until then, he just was pretty much nodding his head. And I just progressively started losing him more and more and more. And, you know, it's not like this one-size-fits-all kind of thing. And certainly we don't do that. But I pretty much assumed that I was reducing his fear, but I was actually heightening it, because he didn't tell me, also because he was 30 minutes late for the appointment and he didn't have time to fill out the intake. And he was the last visit. You know how that goes.
Always so, perfect timing.
Right. I figured he would tell me his relevant medical history, but what he left out was that he had chronic low back pain with radiating leg pain for about 4 years, and he went to two other osteopaths who told him the MRI didn't matter and you should just try PT. And this guy's still a believer in PT, you know. And you know, he said he tried McKenzie and all the stuff that I was basically preaching, and it didn't work for him at all. And then he had surgery, and 3 days later, he was 100% pain-free. So I can see why I was probably irritating the hell out of him.
It was a perfect storm, sounds like.
Yeah, it was. So to even assume that would be leaving, I guess what I learned from, that you should always have them fill out the paperwork no matter what.
So the moral of that story is subjective is crucial. Fill out your paperwork and patience. Get to your appointment on time.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It's never easy when you know what you're telling the patient will be eventually good for them. You're using your best clinical judgment and clinical sense, but they're just not drinking it, the Kool-Aid, and that's an awkward situation, especially when you're dealing with another medical provider.
Right. Well, and yet,
oh, go ahead.
Sorry, Urson. The other thing is that you had no idea that he had heard similar things, you know, two times before, and it hadn't been what he wanted to hear. You know, it kind of sounds like the third time was just the straw that broke the camel's back for him, and he snapped. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I did end up giving him three differentials. He didn't like him though.
Yeah, I was going to say at that point no,
he wasn't happy.
You could have given them anything, and no, it was too late.
No, I asked him at the end of the visit, so do you think it was worth it? And he said no.
Shut down. I'm guessing that was not a returning patient for you.
I don't think so. No. He probably will seek out again.
To have surgery 3 days later, he was ready to do it anyway.
Well, no, that's what it was. He had surgery after having low back pain and leg pain for 4 years. He had surgery after 4 years after trying various PT and nothing worked, and he was pain free. He said after surgery 3 days later.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
So you can see why when I'm trying to steer away from pathoanatomy like we're supposed to and say that, you know, why site studies of people who get MRIs do worse than people who don't get MRIs when being treated the same conservatively. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I just kept on pushing more and more buttons, I think.
Gotcha.
The perfect storm.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
So this is, it kind of leads into, what I wanted to say. So I'll start there. And, one of the biggest things that I see, and that I think is maybe the art of physical therapy. Yeah, I think physical therapy is very much a mix of science and the art of building patient rapport, and enabling them to, as Gene would say, drink the Kool-Aid. So I see
sugar-free Kool-Aid.
Well, whatever floats your boat there, Gene. I'll do the real stuff. But what I see with especially new graduates and even sometimes PTs that have come from places where they are forced to see so many patients that it's very, very much a down to the minute science as to, you know, what they can and can't do. I find that building patient rapport, listening and learning to read the patient and what they really are looking for from the treatment. Most patients want to know how much you care before they care how much you know. And so, like, I find that is, you know, one of the biggest things that new PT is trying to express how much they know about this condition, and sometimes that's not always what the patient needs at that particular moment. So knowing when to say and how to say and how to talk and how to make them feel comfortable is an art that I think the best PTs learn to do that, you know, and now Urson, yours is a very different situation because he's another medical professional and you're trying to come at it from a different angle. I'm not trying to make that correlation, so don't take offense to that, please. But what I am saying is that that I think that's a big mistake that a lot of PTs make, especially, you know, you got one shot during that initial evaluation, and And it's kind of, it's a sales pitch, because if you can't get them on your side, get them drinking the Kool-Aid, and get them to then understand, hey, this guy really does know what he's talking about, they're not going to be compliant. And at that point, you're fighting an uphill battle the whole treatment course. So, I mean, it's a big deal.
That's a great point. Mine actually piggyback off of yours, Joe. And I think it's the sympathy versus empathy discussion. I think what you see,
don't have either, Gene.
Well, I'm just good enough that I don't need either. I get away with it that way. But
he's coldly charismatic, kind of like Dexter.
I just get it done.
People appreciate that.
People appreciate
the right people.
They get better eventually.
Yes. Yeah.
Self-limiting issues.
Not because he cares.
I care so much, I just don't care anymore. Right. So what new grads or younger clinicians see when they treat patients, like you're saying, Joe, is they want to impress them with what they know, but more importantly, they want to show sympathy. But what they don't realize is that most patients don't really want your sympathy. They want empathy. They want you to understand what they're going through and how they feel. They don't want you to feel bad for them. So a lot of times, you know, you see that when I see students, and you kind of see that snowball again, that kind of train wreck building up, not to keep building on Urson's exchange earlier, or to remind him of that. But you can see, like you said, Joe, the patients start to fade and the clinician losing that connection. I had a really interesting discussion with a patient today. She was asking me, and I'm sure you guys get this question all the time, is why did you want to be a PT? You know, what is it about this profession? And you know, you have your standard answers. I want to help people. You know, it's pretty good hours. It's good for families, all that, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you really think about it, what we have that other really clinicians don't have, aside from a select few, is relationships. You know, I mean, we spend 2-3 times a week with a patient for 4-6 up to months if they have post-surgical rehab, and we generally build relationships with people. And if you can't have that interaction with a person, if you can't understand how to separate sympathy and how to separate empathy and how to really read that person, like you're saying, you don't have a relationship. You just have a patient that, you know, you essentially clock in and out. And I think that makes a big difference in how somebody heals and how your treatment progresses.
It yeah, does. And you know, in the case that you can't, you know, fix them. I know that doesn't happen to you, Gene.
I don't even know what that means.
In the case that you're not the provider that they need to be seeing, if you've developed that relationship, then your recommendation, your referral means that much more, and can hopefully get them to the provider that they need to be seeing. I mean, physical therapy, as much as I want it to be the end-all, cure-all, it's not sometimes. And so if you've developed that relationship, then you're going to be able to get them to the next step in the medical system. And I think that's important too.
Right. That's all part of the buy-in. And I talk about that a lot in my course. I talk about that a lot in my blog. Like, buy-in is very important. I mean, and I think you're right, novice clinicians really are out there to prove how much they know, and they really just forget that the patient, like, everyone has their own story. Like, my patient had his own story, and if I had known that story, I probably wouldn't have approached it that way. I think we often forget to ask.
But not to say that you're a novice clinician by any stretch of the imagination. That's just...
No. I've been out there for almost too long, actually. But I still love it, and you know, I learn every day. But I just started even really within the past 2-3 years on patients who maybe aren't responding as fast as I would like. I started really getting into what's going on with their lives, and sometimes it's just they have something beyond. You know, there are just certain things that are way beyond the mechanical and way beyond what we can affect. Even if you're as charismatic as Gene, sometimes we just can't get through to people with like the half hour or the 20 minutes or the hour for a week. You know, imagine like that they have to go back to their life, their crappy job, their whatever, their enabling family, you know. And I think conversely, sometimes we just forget to ask, like, what are your goals or what does this pain mean to you? You know, for some people, like when my wife has low back pain, it means to her that she will have difficulty caring for her family versus like if her arm hurts, she doesn't care. But when her back hurts, she gets very, very emotional about it. And I think that's assuming everything is like a simple clinical presentation, I think it is another mistake that clinicians often make. You know, I've been guilty of that several times in my career. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we've all had, and that's a great point. You know, we all have, you know, if you smell something that you smelled sometime in your childhood, you have that kind of, I think it's your limbic system, right, that connects all that, and you have this recollection of what it was. And it's got to be the same thing with somebody that's having some kind of pain or new pain. You don't know, like you said, really their story until you develop that connection and you listen to them and really hear what they're telling you.
Right.
Did you just bring in the limbic system, Gene?
Yeah, I don't know. I just blacked out for a second. It just came out of my mouth.
I heard him typing. I think he was Googling.
I think what you said, Urson, about your wife and you know why she gets emotional about the back and not the arm, and you know that brings in again what you were talking about the earlier. You know the whole fear dynamic of pain and how you know her back has more consequences in her mind than her arm, and so that does factor into every patient's pain.
Mm-hmm. So when somebody is in pain, right, and we see them, we obviously want to get them better and restore function. And one of the things that honestly, well, I'm not going to confirm or deny that I have a mistake that I've made or struggle with, but
you read about it.
I've read about it. I've seen some videos. I've heard stories of, and I see this. I see this all the time. This is almost 9 out of 10 students and young clinicians have this. Is you want to fix everybody the first time you see them, or every time you see them, you want them to be 100%. And I think part of that is kind of developed in us, and which is why we're again in the field that we are. Part of us generally want to help people. At least I would hope that's why most of us are doing this. And it's once you have, I think you call them fast responders, right, Urson?
Yeah, rapid responders.
Rapid responders. Once you have that rapid responders, you want everybody to be a rapid responder, because you have somebody barely sitting in your chair filling out paperwork, and then you have somebody walking out shocked and awed that there's no pain. When one of my first patients that I had as a clinician was this woman. I still almost remember it like it was yesterday. She was filling out her paperwork, barely able to sit in the chair, squirming. And early 30s, fairly young. She comes in, you know, tells me her story, low back pain, seen 3 PTs, really kind of at her wit's end, has been in really bad pain for 4 months, low back pain, just can't focus on work, and she doesn't know what to do. So, you know, I check her out, ask her what the other PTs have done. They barely even touched her back. So, you know, I check her out, and regardless of what philosophy you follow, so I'm, again, biomechanical, her SI joint wasn't really moving, it was jammed up. So I looked at it and I was like, all right, in my mind, everything made sense that this was an SI joint restriction, hypomobility. So I kind of set her up, you know, did a couple techniques just to calm the system down, and I manipulated her SI joint, got a nice clean cavitation. She stands up, takes a step, and starts crying. just full on tears crying. And I'm standing there going in my head going, what did I just do to this woman? What is happening? And so, you know, you just kind of, it feels like time freezes and you have no idea what to do. So I was like, what's going on? Are you okay? She's like, I don't have my pain. And that was just that kind of emotional release for her that she didn't have pain. And, you know, seeing that, that's, I know what I want out of all my patients, but, you know, her pain came back 80% better, but still, you know, and, you know, she stuck through another 4 weeks and we did all the rehab and she was good to go. But that, seeing that, I know it's what you want of all your patients. And until you can see that that's not a possibility or a realistic possibility every time, that's a hard pill to swallow, I've heard.
Meaning you want to make them all cry, Gene, or?
Yeah. Therapeutically, yes.
The arc tissue is next.
I like it. That's a good idea.
Right. You know, we all definitely want rapid responders. I pretty much guarantee majority of my patients, I would say 80% of people fall into a category where we should be able to have significant changes within the first two visits. And, you know, Mackenzie's been talking about that for decades. Chad Cook backed that up in some research that I like that said that if the patient basically improves significantly on visit one, if they maintain even a semblance of that improvements on visit two, then it's good outcomes. So I even tell people that because that also helps them buy in and helps them be more compliant. It's like my message is you're gonna have some of the improvement if you do what I tell you to do. But yeah, you know, it is still disappointing when you don't have a rapid improvement and something other than like a frozen shoulder, you know, that you wouldn't expect it or a post-op. And it's still confusing. And it's getting to be a definite small percentage of my population, but no one likes, we don't get into this profession to lose. Absolutely. And we all, you know, the more you learn and the more assessments, you know, and the more tools you have in your bag, the more people you can make into rapid responders. But it's tough. And I think that, you know, the one thing I tell students is that you should really be happy because I'm sometimes disappointed when someone comes in with a 9 and you get them down to a 1 or 2 and you're disappointed. Sometimes the patient is ecstatic and you're disappointed, yeah, you know, because you didn't get them to be a 0.
That's a good point. And, you know, what I'm hearing you say also, Urson, is that you set expectations for the patient, whether those expectations are, you know, that they could be a rapid responder or whether, you know, something like a frozen shoulder or a more chronic condition that might not respond as well. You're setting that expectation for the patient. And that expectation, you know, as long as you're realistic, that builds trust. You know, there's nothing worse than being the therapist that continues to push back the goals. I mean, give them realistic expectations, and then overachieve rather than you know, giving them lofty expectations and underachieving, right? And so, I mean, that's part of that rapport and making sure that they trust that you're shooting them straight, you know, to the best of your ability, you know?
Right. Basically, if I do tell the rapid responders who I believe should be a rapid responder, if I see 0 changes in 2 visits, I refer out. Like, I always have a plan B, and people appreciate the transparency, I think, you know. Absolutely. Especially because I'm spending an hour with each one at this point now that I'm cash-based. I mean, it's like if you can't make significant changes, you see 0 changes after seeing someone for two straight hours, or, you know, not 2 straight hours, but 2 hours over 2 consecutive visits, you're probably not going to make any big changes. I mean, there was a McKenzie research article, I think they studied it in the 80s or something, and it's still pretty much true now, though. They found that if you couldn't make significant changes within 6 visits, then it was actually a very, very tough case. And I think we can all agree upon that, because basically you're looking at somewhere between 3 and 4 weeks, you haven't made significant changes, that's a tough case, right? I mean, that is even if they should be a rapid responder, they're not a rapid responder for you.
Right. And it's correct. That's where that experience piece comes together. You know, actually really just being a good, you might not, let's go back to your case for a second, Erson, again, not to bring it up to rub it in your face. But when somebody comes in, we're kind of trained to look at diagnoses, right? We have pattern recognition. So in your mind, whether that's what you tell the patient to empower them or not, in your mind, you're still kind of going through, what could this really be? And if you have a good understanding of what's in front of you, you know, a simple restriction, if there's such a thing, or a spondylitic change, which presents as an instability, you know, those take a long time for the system to bounce back from. But again, it comes back to what we talked about, is our goal for the patient versus the patient's goal for themselves. Because even though they might be have an instability in their system, they'll take more time than they're going to spend with you, that they'll have to be diligent with home exercises and all that afterwards. Your goal for them might be an even tougher goal than what they have for themselves. And again, it comes back to what we talked about in the beginning, is listening to your patient.
Right.
God, I love it when this thing just comes full circle. It's a thing of beauty.
Right, yes. We start with Erson's train wreck and we're going to end with Erson's train wreck.
Well, I was going to say with the moral lesson, but if that's the way you want to go, I'm okay with it.
Okay, yes. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight.
And then you'll feel better in the morning. It's okay.
I should, yes.
All right, so we would love to hear from you guys. Please leave us a message or a comment on iTunes. Go and visit themanualtherapist.com, Erson's blog. Let him know some of the mistakes you've seen or made, and what you learned from it, how you got better. And, you know, if we hear anything interesting, maybe we can talk about it or share it during our next podcast. So again, Dr. E, thanks for joining Joe and I on the Therapy Insiders this week. And we look forward to recording more podcasts with you.
Yes, I'm on the inside now. It's great.
True insider.
Yes. There you go.
As long as you don't have to treat any more osteopaths.
No. That's going to be one of my on my intake questionnaire now. Are you an osteopath? I don't take that insurance. I don't see your kind here.
Yeah, he doesn't mean that. All right, so thanks again for joining us on Therapy Insiders.
I love osteopaths who listen to Therapy Insiders podcast.
Michigan State, don't ban the manual therapist.
Right.
Thanks for listening. If you guys have any questions, shoot us a message at therapyinsiders.com. Again, themanualtherapist.com. And leave us some feedback on iTunes and reviews, so you know if you like it or not. All right, talk to you guys next week.
All right, see you later.
Bye.